Right, 8 minutes after 8 o'clock, FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Glad to have you here this hour, turning up your voice at 343-0106. As we mentioned throughout the show, 30 years ago today, the Tiananmen Square massacre, the man standing in front of the tank, and this was the report as it came through from CBS News to households all over the United States that evening.
It was noontime today in the center of Beijing when a man walked to the middle of the Avenue of Eternal Peace, which, as it happened, was already occupied. He walked to the middle and stood there. The man was alone. The tank was not. It wasn't just a single tank he stopped. There were 18 tanks and armored carriers in this convoy, and while he talked to the crew and ignored the gunfire, he stopped all of them. One man alone, of course, can't stop an army. Except for a moment, that's exactly what happened here. For 3 minutes in the middle of the day, an army was stopped by a man who stood still. A man who'd made up his mind, it seems, though why, we just don't know. But when bystanders rushed in to save this stubborn soul, it wasn't easily done. He was pushed away at last, faceless in the crowd. Safe, we think, but in a city verging on calamity. What moves a man to just stand still? Is it courage or outrage or madness? We can't tell what was on his mind, and we can't forget what he did. Richard Roth, CBS News, Beijing.
Of course, that was part of the Tiananmen Square massacre, that the death toll ranges from 300 to over 2,500 people, probably according to the Chinese government officials. One person got a scratch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but yeah, the death toll in the thousands injured as well in that. And a moment that sticks with folks of my age for sure, watching that, the reports coming in on the nightly news back then of that in 89. You pointed out you were in China how many years ago?
It was probably about 10 years ago, maybe 12 years ago, that I went to China as part of a student ambassador, is what they called us, even though I would argue we weren't the greatest ambassadors, but right. We were a student ambassador group that went over to China and walked through Tiananmen Square, that huge, huge portrait of Mao Zedong that still sits over Tiananmen Square. And it's not like the museums and places you visit in so many other countries where they actually, you know, talk about their tragedies in the past.
Right.
There's no mention of it at all in China. Only even today, Taiwan and Hong Kong, you'll hear mention of it because they're not,
sure,
you know, within China's.
Hong Kong has changed, but yes, for the island of Formosa.
Yeah,
that gets under the Chinese, red Chinese crawl.
And they don't even talk about it, the Chinese government. And even with Pompeo today speaking out about the tragedies from 30 years ago, Chinese embassy spokespersons have been speaking out against Pompeo and saying that we have violated international law by even referencing
Tiananmen
Square.
Of course we have. Look at the big collective yawn from me, from lots of Americans, probably from those free Chinese on the island of Taiwan. All right, to talk more about this and author of the Mad Jones Heretic Trilogy, also the Nam de website of QuinnHillier.com, and also the author of What a President Couldn't Teach, Tank Man Did, over at the Washington Examiner, y'all. This is Quinn Hillier. Good morning.
Good morning. And Dalton, I'm very disappointed you didn't do a sit-in in Tiananmen Square and demand that the Chinese government hand over authority to the Taiwanese.
I should have. Instead, I did a sit-in and ate some Beijing duck, some Peking
you
duck.
You wimp.
Let's talk about this, Quinn. Your piece up right now over at WashingtonExaminer.com. What a President Couldn't Teach, Tank Man Did. Walk us through this.
Okay. Well, first of all, just to be clear, if you can find the video itself online, not just the still picture, but the video.
Sure, I posted that on the Twitter feed this morning. Yeah,
it's amazing. He didn't actually, unlike what the CBS guy just said in the replay you did, he didn't just stand still.
He moved. Crawled
the tank
up.
Tried to go around him, and he walked sideways to get in front of the tank again. The tank tried to go the other way. He walked sideways to get in front of the tank again. The tank stopped, and then he crawled on top of the tank and started yelling into the turret where the guy was. I mean, it was absolutely one of the most astonishing acts of courage that I've ever seen. Courage on behalf of freedom, and he showed up the American president at the time because in what I think was the worst hour or the worst hour, figuratively speaking, of the otherwise fairly distinguished career of the elder Bush. Bush, not only, I mean, he had a few words of criticism for the Chinese, delivered in a monotone for the Chinese communist government, and he put on a few mild sanctions. But basically, as a lot of historians have noted, as they look back on it, and they looked at the secret, you know, negotiations and stuff, he basically sided with the government of China. I mean, he said, we're suspending high level talks and all this kind of stuff. And then a month later, he sent his two top foreign policy aides, Eagle Berger and Scowcroft, over to have to go to China, to go to Beijing, and to reassure them that their strategic dialogue and friendship would continue. And then 5 months later, he sends Scowcroft back, and Scowcroft, this time publicly, literally toasts the Chinese communist dictators. This was not somebody sounding the clarion call for freedom, but fortunately, we had Tank Man who did it for him and for all of us.
You know, Quentin, a couple things. I mean, it also makes me think about the Green Revolution in Iran, and we had a chance to do something there we didn't. And then again, in other situations where there's tyrannical powers, we do something. So it is a little bit schizophrenic the way we react to these situations around the planet. Is that based on the size or the value of the tyrannical government?
Oh, well, a lot of it is based on who the president is, and Bush, having been the equivalent of ambassador to China, had this conceit that he understood the Chinese better than anybody, and he had these ongoing relationships with, I think it was Lee at the time, Lee Daoping, however you say the guy's name, and so he thought that, you know, that he was much more insightful than everybody else. So it really does depend. It depends on the circumstances on the ground. It depends on the military strength. It depends on a lot of factors, and it also depends on the personality of the president. In this case, nobody's saying, oh, we should have gone to war with China, but we could have imposed much more strict sanctions. We could have led a world coalition to completely isolate them economically. Remember, 30 years ago, China was not the economic powerhouse that it is today. We could isolate them economically without harming the U.S. economy the way it would now. I mean, you know, it might have been a little blip, but it wouldn't have been a major harm. And we certainly could have spoken up more than George H.W. Bush did. So, again, I was very disappointed at the time, remained disappointed with Bush, but let's focus on Tank Man.
Well, I do, and I want to, because, I mean, we can talk about the whole realpolitik of this, but you write this, and this is where I am so very interested, not just in these occasions, but in all these places throughout history. You write, Tank Man was risking his very life at the mercy of the grace and decency of the tank's anonymous driver, and the driver's humanity validated Tank Man's hopes and bravery. You go on to talk about in East Germany later that year, border guards responded much the same way the tank driver had done in Peking, when protesters by the tens of thousands gathered near the Berlin Wall at various times in the months leading up to the wall's fall, police and army units were given permission to use force, but they rarely did. It's that I'm also interested, other than just the nations and the posturing, human beings, and when human beings aren't coerced, forced, or panicked into action, treat other human beings a lot of times decently, sometimes horribly, but a lot of times decently. And I think that's an interesting angle you make between these two situations.
Well, yeah, I mean, Tank Man would have been a different sort of symbol if the tank driver had just said, sorry, buddy, and rolled right over him.
Mm-hmm.
But the tank driver had an element of humanity, and he stopped. In East Germany, as I said, there were official orders that went out that didn't say shoot and slaughter these demonstrators, but it said you have permission to shoot and slaughter them in order to keep them under control if you want, if you think necessary. And they very rarely use force, and there was a pray-in with something like 7,000 to 10,000 people right there at a church near the wall 1 month before the wall fell, when things, you know, could have gotten really out of hand, and not a single shot was fired. These were guards that were on edge thinking people might rush the wall, and they had the state behind them telling them they had to defend the wall and not let anybody through. And you'd think they'd be trigger-happy and nervous, but they didn't fire. I think they recognized there's a moral force in favor of freedom, and there's something called courage that people admire, and if they're not told with a gun to their head that they have to shoot their own guns,
right,
they just say, you know what? I cannot shoot these other human beings. Because in their hearts, this is the old Goldwater saying, but in their hearts, they know they're right.
Yep.
And that is a symbol and a message for all of us in favor of moral courage, especially moral courage in favor of freedom.
No, it is, and it's, you know, it's something that has come up since and will come up again. And, you know, what do we do as a nation to, without engaging? I mean, you and I split on the engagement, putting military places, but at least from a rhetoric side, at least from a help side, we should encourage people that are freedom loving, and that gets confused in places like the Middle East sometimes. But elsewhere, people that are freedom loving, we've got to stand up for them. We got to continue that of our republic and be that bastion for people that want self determination.
At least give them aid. I mean, Ronald Reagan didn't send American troops to many places, but he sent arms,
Grenada,
humanitarian aid. And he took a very bad situation in Latin America, and by the time he left, they were more prosperous, they were more free, there was less tyranny, there was less slaughter, because he gave them the tools to help themselves. That's the kind of thing that I'm talking about.
All right, well, let's do this. I got to run to the break, but speaking of Americans giving freedom and freeing people, of course, coming up Thursday, the 75. I still have problems saying anniversary, even though it's accurate. 75 years since D-Day, and so many Americans suffered, so many Americans died for freedom of people on the European continent and around the planet. We'll talk about that when we return. FM Talk 106.5. Back to our conversation with Quinn Hillier from QuinnHillier.com, also the author of Mad Jones Trilogy, available now. Where, Quinn?
It is available on Amazon.com.
All right. So yeah, Bezos getting a cut of the money too, but listen, we won't be bothered in that. I wonder why. Talk about what comes up on Thursday. And I know anniversary is the accurate term. I've just always had a problem with it. 75 years since, well, you know what, in this case, even though all the blood and treasure lost for this country, the great and valiant American soldiers and others, but let's talk about Americans that freed a continent.
They freed a continent. They and Canadians, Australians, British,
yep.
Poles, but yes, we were the largest contingent, and we had on D-Day by far the toughest beaches. Not to belittle what the others did, because they
didn't know. That's fair enough, because everybody went into a beach that could have been the worst.
But this was topographically, we knew that this was going to be the worst because of the topography and the German defenses and the way that the bunkers were built into the hillside, angling down downward on the beach, which was about 350 or 400 yards of open sand. I mean, what these people, this was where the company after which Saving Private Ryan was, Saving Private Ryan was fictionalized, but it was based on a real company.
Looking for the
Sullivans. This was where they landed. This was the killing ground. This was where you had no protection over 350 to 400 yards of open beach, completely getting strafed by machine gun fire. You couldn't stand still. You couldn't go back. The only way was forward, and yet Ford was just a slaughterhouse. I was there last September. It took my breath away.
And that is one of the many reasons we call it the greatest generation. As we look at the people that risked all on that day with, it's one thing to look at, look at stories in the rear view and through history. And I've talked about this before, but cleaning out my late grandparents' farmhouse up in the attic, got copies of Life magazines. I still have that were from, they saved everything from during the war. And to read those articles as they were written as news, right, without knowing mm-hmm. what was going to happen next, took what had been an academic understanding of World War II to a new level for me, to read through those stories reporting as the war was going on. It was incredible for me.
I bet it was. I mean, because you, as you say, you didn't know that the result would be victory. And again, there are battlefields where actually many, many more casualties were suffered, especially in the Civil War. But if you've ever been to Gettysburg and you look mm-hmm. at the mile of open ground, now granted it wasn't against machine gun fire, but mile of open ground that that Pickett's charge went over, you get the same sort of lump in your throat, intake of breath. You cannot believe people would march across that mile of open ground. Well, you can't believe that people would go across 350 yards of open beach with machine gun fire, and they were doing it to free other people. They were doing it to free a continent. They were doing it for freedom. It takes your breath away, and it inspires you like nothing you've ever seen. And to stand there and look at the way that, I mean, the bunkers are still there, and to see how they're angled there, sort of counter, there's an angle that lets them get you from both sides. It's the guns are pointed right down at you. How these people did this, I just don't know.
I mean, it ties two things you said together, that angle, and of course, that was where the Pickett's charge was heading towards this Union cannonade there that was at the angle at Gettysburg. That's what they called it there.
They called it
the angle.
They called it the angle mm-hmm. at Gettysburg, and again in Normandy, it was a different kind of angle. But the angle was down from two different sides. There was like a area where no matter which way you went or which way you turned, the fire was coming from either the right in front of you or the left in front of you. You got it both ways, and yet you had to go forward to get to the hillside that provided at least a modicum, a little bit of protection.
Wow. Quinn, if people want to read more of your work, where do they go?
QuinnHillier.com or Google Quinn Hillier, Washington Examiner.
As always, thank you, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
All right. Coming right back, we'll grab your phone calls at 343-0106. Yeah, I've stood at that angle many times there at Gettysburg and looked out across the field. It's something. And they said, side note, but you can stand there at the angle, and they have signage there and says you could have walked from there to the sunken road, which is out, it's not halfway, it's like 75% across that open. And they said you could walk from there to the sunken road and not step on ground.
Oh, man.
Human bodies from... something to remember. And we will talk more about D-Day coming up on Thursday, which is 75 years since D-Day. All right, be right back. Your phone calls and text 343-0106.
It's 8:37 now on FM Talk 106.5. This is Mobile Mornings. Right now we head to McConnell Automotive and talk to Mitch McConnell. Hey, Mitch.
Hey, Dalton, how are you, big guy?
Hey, I am doing great. I wanted to know, if I come out today and shop at McConnell Automotive, what makes McConnell Automotive different than everybody else?
Dalton, we've been doing this car business thing really my whole life because it started back in, 1955 with my granddad. But I think the thing, Dalton, is we've heard over the years, man, a lot of people have had bad experiences when they've shopped for cars in the past. And as much as we hate to hear that, one of the things that my granddad always said is, you know, treat people the way you want to be treated, and listen to what they need, and, you know, give them the most for the money at the end. And I think that's still the right way to do business. So the biggest thing, Dalton, I think, if people will shop our website, McConnellAutomotive.com, or give us a chance and just talk to us, they might really be pleasantly surprised that car shopping can actually be easy. You can check out a price online and actually get that price when you come in our dealership. There's some things that just seem so simple. And I think we just love making shopping easy and buying easy and lowering people's payments, giving them the most for their trade-in, but really just making car shopping a little bit of fun and making people feel really at home. And that's what we do every day, buddy. And we want to invite people to just check it out anytime they want to shop at McConnellAutomotive.com. The easiest way to shop.
All right. You're good people at McConnell Automotive. We appreciate your time, Mitch.
We tried, Dalton. Y'all have a great day, partner.
That's Mitch McConnell. Make sure you go see him and the crew at McConnell Automotive. You'll find them on Dolphin Street just east of I-65.
Right. Grab some calls and text at 343-0106, 343-0106. One of the items up and is going to be the perennial, at least it seems to be perennial, the question about the toll. And maybe some more information coming out here in the next couple of days. But the I-10 Mobile River Bridge project is, there's so many, when I was talking about this the other day with a friend, there's so many angles because it's, we're talking about it and I take this off-road, that off-road, you know, you can say, okay, well, the key to this is the question of a toll. Sure it is. But let's go back and say, is the scope of the project in the first place what is needed?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think you can get, except for a few exceptions of people who don't like Christmas morning and puppy dogs and all that, you can get the some people agreeing on the fact that we got to do something, right? That do we have an issue with traffic around the tunnels? I would say most people say yes.
Yeah, anybody that crosses the bay, let's say more than once a month, would agree that there needs to be something done about the traffic there,
okay,
crossing.
So that's the baseline. Do we have, with the majority of people, we have that baseline, mm-hmm, and we agree there's an issue. Okay. We agree that issue has been decades in the making. They knew about it for, you know, 30 years that this was coming. And I know a bunch of people say, well, you could, you know, the angle going in the tunnel and all. I agree, but we have to agree on a baseline. The baseline is we need to do something. All right. Now, beyond that, how do you solve it? Mm-hmm. And do you... Because you look at our traffic issue is a huge deal for us, and it's also, as many have said, a big deal for I-10 because it's a pinch point along a route that takes you from Jacksonville to Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but compared, let's just be, I mean, I'm a homer, and I'm always going to fight for us, but yes, I can argue that the traffic issues we deal with around the tunnel are nothing compared to Atlanta on any given day.
Right.
Right, or New York or Los Angeles,
Houston,
right?
Houston, any of those massive
Houston
cities.
Houston is ridiculous. Okay. So we can agree that some place, but this is our issue, and this is the one I care about. So we want to make it better. Can we make it better for less than $2.4 billion? I think that's the next question. Mm-hmm. And as you go through this kind of list here, trying to figure it out, so we agree there's a problem. We agree we ought to do something. Okay. Can you choose from, you know, a lot of things? So you're getting a health insurance plan. You got the bronze, the silver, and the gold. Is there a bronze plan? I don't think anybody's asked this, but I mean, I think it's a fair way to look at it. Is there a bronze bridge plan,
mm-hmm,
or whatever? Is there a bronze plan to help make this alleviate traffic issues at the same time lower the cost? And then, you know, so I think right now we're looking at gold. Can we choose bronze?
Mm-hmm. You're talking about value here. We want to get as much value.
I'm being cheap. Yeah.
Well, because, I mean, you might need a car. You're tired of walking around town everywhere.
Correct.
Doesn't mean you're going to go out and buy the newest Lamborghini out,
yes,
there on the lot.
That's right.
You're just going to work within your means. And
you may want the Lambo.
Mm-hmm.
How about that, kids? I said Lambo.
And everyone would tell you you're being irresponsible if you don't have the money to go out and buy the shiniest, hottest car. Mm-hmm. You need to buy something that will get you where you need to go.
Right, so that's
that
the bronze
afford.
Plan.
Right. Right?
Or I would argue aluminum or iron. But it would be, so is there an option there that would alleviate traffic, maybe even have the ability to, down the road, you know, smart building, where you build something, maybe you can't build all this other stuff right now, but you have set yourself up that you can connect to it or something down the road. Okay, so there's a bronze, and then is there a bronze plan, and what does that bronze plan cost? Is it, you know, how much less than $2.4 billion is it? If it's $2.1 billion, well, to heck with it, you may as well probably go for the gold. Mm-hmm. But is there a bronze plan that still works? Because remember, it's not just, this is why I said there's so many offshoots here. You have the idea of tolling of the bridge, of course, and they're talking about tolling the Wallace Tunnel. They are going to, in this gold plan, which I think makes sense in any plan, have an additional, you know, the 100% increase in the number of lanes of the Bayway, doubling the lanes, which we could use right now, but also it takes the additional traffic that will be coming off a bridge or coming out of the tunnel and gives them more space and carry that over across the bay and on into Baldwin County. Mm-hmm. So you don't just move that traffic glut to the east, or in the case of sometimes the issue coming west. Okay, so we've now decided if they give us a bronze plan and that bronze plan can solve it, it's 80% as good, 70% as good solving traffic. Do we go with that? And then what does that cost? And then at that point, you arrive at that number, and then you got to figure out who's paying for what.
Right.
Who's paying for what? Right now. Okay, right now. So in case y'all haven't been keeping up with this, because Lord knows this has changed a bunch, that for the longest time, this project, I've been talking about this since this station launched. Which, by the way, we're in our 10th year. We're 10 years old now. Been talking about it since we launched the station. There were environmental impact statements and all that stuff going on back then. It was an 80-20 split, 80 federal, 20 some amalgamation of local, state, municipal money. Now it's maybe 7% federal if we get that 170-something million infra grant.
That's a big change.
Big change. So then you have the private concessionaire coming in to put up the, you have federal money, maybe 7%, ALDOT money, and then you have the private concessionaire taking on the lion's share that would be paid back through the toll. Is there some other way to do this and have this not be with the private concessionaire? Is there a way to do this and have it set up to where, in this bronze plan, we also address money coming from other places? And I would argue that right now, if you're expecting more federal money through an infrastructure plan, Democrats aren't going to be doing anything but trying to impeach the president. Mm-hmm. Right now. He's not going to work with them. They're not going to work with him. Not any time between now and 2020. President wins re-election. Well, then everything will be different. Do we, and I know people say, we need it now. We needed it 10, 20 years ago. I get it. But do we delay for another couple of years to wait and see if there's more federal money before going forward? These are all questions, and that's just the tip of the iceberg on this as we go forward. Grab a couple calls here before the news break. John is in Mobile, and he's up first. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. One of the things that I don't think you're taking into account is the people that are making the decisions that give the approvals are in Washington.
The funding, it's ALDOT. That portion's ALDOT.
But to approve what's going to be built, and if the federal government has to accept it, right?
Yes.
Okay. So when you throw unelected bureaucrats in there, there is no silver or bronze plan. It's their way or the highway. And, you know, it's not their money. They don't care. You know, and plus, you know, when you look at the money that's being spent in Birmingham at the 2059 interchange,
right,
there's going to be no toll there. I mean, to me, it goes back to what I've said, you know, that while we need a 51st state from Panama City to the Mississippi-Louisiana line.
Right, the Gulf State.
California.
Yeah, but
I don't care.
That's fun to. I love talking about the Gulf State and drinking beer and doing it, but it's not happening anytime soon. So what do we do now?
Well, it might happen before the bridge.
It's funny. Appreciate the call, John. Leaves the line open at 343-0106. We'll come right back. Y'all hold on. Coming straight back to the phones and text line. So what do we do? Is it, what if we said, hey, we don't want this. We don't want this right now. Is that an option? Right, 851 FM Talk 106.5, and it is Mobile Mornings on this Tuesday. Glad to have you here. Head to the phones, and also I want to get to a text if I get a chance here. This is one that I received on my phone mm-hmm. from a local small business, although I'd say they're getting bigger all the time, and that is doing something in my house right now. They're actually working in my house right now, and They texted about the toll. They said the listeners of the show, and they said, you know, not to get off. They were talking about the parts being delivered, and then they said, hey, not to get off the parts and fixing the thing at your house, but I do want to talk to you about this Bayway toll.
So they're working on your house and listening to you.
Yeah.
So if you say something they disagree with,
you know what? Don't encourage
I'm
people.
I'm sorry.
Please don't encourage me. I'm going to read their text in a second. Greg is in Daphne. He's up next.
Morning, Sean.
Morning, Greg.
Hey, you know, I spent years driving all over this country, and a lot of these, we talked about some of the large cities and how they handle and what their traffic nightmares are. But in a lot of these cities, you get on the interstate, and if you're passing through, you can jump up on a flyway and go above, knowing your next exit is 15 miles, 20 miles down the road. And I always wondered why we never considered, if you're going to do a flyover bridge instead of the tunnel, that would be for through traffic and all the trucks and everybody heading beyond, you know, 59, obviously Malibu to 98, and let locals use the old tunnel and the Bayway to simply get off at, you know, Malbus or the Daphne exit.
Yeah, this
and
would
let
be
all
something.
Other traffic just blow on by.
Greg, you're talking about something that would maybe, let's talk about going eastbound. It would get, you know, maybe right where they're talking about the bridge, you get up there in Virginia and maybe not get off till Malbus or something like that.
Oh, no, way beyond Malbus. I mean, maybe 59 would be the next one you could get off at and let all the Eastern Shore traffic use the tunnel.
You bypass all
the
that.
Costs for the locals.
What do you think the hue and cry would be from the city of Spanish Fort and Daphne and Locksley and every, they'd be, you know, up at arms. Maybe not Locksley because they'd land there, but Spanish Fort and Daphne would be like, wait a second, don't let them bypass us.
Well, I didn't say it was a perfect fix, but
I'm not saying you're wrong.
The transportation, because a lot of that traffic is out-of-towners.
Oh, you're right.
When they see the tunnel and they don't know how to drive through a tunnel, which is understandable with a, you know, near 90-degree turn on the entry. But just, you know, say, you know, local traffic, take this route. You know, through traffic, take that one and go. But
yeah.
I understand what you're saying. You're
no,
saying,
no, I'm... You're right. I'm just being pragmatic. Idealistically, yeah. you're spot on. Engineering-wise and traffic flow, you're spot on. I just have been doing this so long that I go, okay, so then those cities will say, wait a second, you're taking these people. They can't stop and get a burger here on Hamburger Hill.
Right. Well, living over here now, I tell you, there's as much traffic as they probably need. That's for sure. Issue, but you know, it's packed enough with the growth over here on the Eastern Shore.
And what if you did that flyover? Is there a bronze plan for that? You know, we're at $2.4 billion right now. It's staggering to me how, unless there's a huge amount of federal money in this, how Alabama is ever going to come up with the money for this.
Well, I mean, it's the people that would pay the toll, the ones that are passing through.
But, you know, the people who drive that all the time would be like, oh, well, you know what, their formula for the money being recouped would probably be thrown off because there'd be a certain percentage, if it wasn't prime time, that would not take the toll, even the big flyover, and go, you know, on the current route to save the money. So... I'm not raining on your parade. Your idea, I think, is a very solid idea. I just wonder if they would ever let it happen. All right, appreciate that call. Leaves the line open at 343-0106. So get right back to the phones, but I want to read this to you. So this is small business owner. I'd argue that small business has gotten pretty big over the last few years. I think y'all get to be medium-sized soon. Small business owner, this person texted me. He said, I have techs. Okay, for this company, I have techs that live in Spanish Fort and Daphne and do a bunch of work across the bay. This toll would cost us thousands of dollars a year in added overhead. And you know, as a small business owner yourself, that these costs will be passed on to the customer. Listen to both shows, morning and midday show, really starting to concern me. This is really going to hit on small business owners. Do they think tourist or flyover drivers are the ones that that will be paying the most? Sorry to hit you with this. Okay. So, because that was 10 o'clock at night. Y'all, I don't sleep, by the way. I want to sleep. I'm not one of these people. I don't need sleep. I need it.
I checked in on the email last night, and you were sending emails at at 10:30, 11 o'clock.
Yeah,
that's still working. But
about the only time it gets quiet.
And that's just one small business owner. Just think of how many are in those shoes. If we have to pay a $6 toll, which would just be unbelievable, how much extra the businesses in both Mobile and Baldwin counties would have to pay. It's unbelievable. And I think that's why we can't just take this first deal that was put out there for us.
Right, but to do that, like John brought up, there are some things when this is what's frustrating. You're going to make changes to an interstate, a federal roadway. So you have to do things, John's correct, to comply with certain things. But if they're not giving you more than 7%, or possibly, remember, this info grant money is not done. This is the maybe.
Hmm.
Let's say it was zero, just for the sake of discussion, and there was no federal money in it, but you had to comply with federal edicts on the interstate. That's beyond frustrating to me. That is, obviously, things like safety and weight-bearing and those kind of things. Yes, absolutely. I don't want to do some nickel-and-dime, knockoff, chromed-out version of something. I want to do something real. But things like, that'll be part of the federal structure. I mean, it's like the bicycle lane that takes a lot of heat on this, and people get all over, well, why are they putting a bicycle lane in? Well, number one, it's a federal roadway, and I think there, if I remember correctly, if you change it, you have to put this in. You know, it was State Senator Chris Elliott saying the other day, we could take out the bike lane, it would save this much money, but then he said also he thought it was part of the federal money. So if you get a dollar, you got to spend $30 million on a bike. I mean, this is, like I said, this is not easy. A lot of people think this is a pretty easy up and down discussion. It is beyond nuanced. And that's why we'll talk about it again coming up in 3 hours on Midday Mobile. Mike Gallagher on the way next. Y'all have a great one.